Welcome to the Christadelphian Classics podcast, brought to you by Wilderness Voice. Principles and Proverbs by Islip Collier, Part 2, Proverbs, Chapter 8, Diligence and Sloth. One who desires to learn from the book of Proverbs must be quick to see himself in any trace of the evil tendencies that are there condemned. He must not always be on the lookout for extreme types. He should remember that he is probably as strange a mixture as any other man, and without being an extreme example of either good or evil, he may often furnish illustrations, sometimes painful, negative illustrations, of Solomon's penetrating wisdom. We never have any difficulty in observing such things in others, rather it's difficult for us to refrain from observing. Yet, although illustrations of various weaknesses are constantly before us, we rarely meet an extreme type. We may never encounter a complete fool, according to the full definition given, but we often witness a measure of folly, even on the part of those who are usually wise. In the same way, we may never find a complete and hopeless sluggard, but we often see a strange, occasional slothfulness, even in usually industrious men, so it's possible that we may find it in ourselves. It's written of diligence that it maketh rich, that the hand of the diligent shall bear rule, that the substance of a diligent man is precious, that the soul of the diligent shall be made fat, and that the thoughts of the diligent tend to plenteousness, and that the man diligent in his business shall stand before kings. It's written that sloth will lead to poverty, to wanton destruction, that a sluggard is like smoke to the eyes of those who employ him, he's brother to a waster, and finally, we have that well-known passage calling on him to learn from the insect world. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. So far, the lessons are obvious and comment might seem to be superfluous. We might easily read all these passages and, thinking only of extreme types, quite fail to derive any benefit. We are workers, not idlers, diligent, not slothful, and so we might feel that in these matters no reform is necessary. There are some passages regarding sloth, however, which will make us seek for a deeper meaning. A wise saying is often purposely made too extreme to be literally applicable to any man. It's intended for all readers, and therefore it's not designed to make a perfect fit for any. No sane man would purposely walk on hot coals or take fire in his bosom, but there are many who in a metaphorical sense play with fire and are scorched. There are some who are wise enough to hear the words of wisdom and intelligent enough to apply them to their own experience. They see the evil possibilities in careless action and deliver themselves, while the heedless pass on and are punished. Just as men may be warned against 1,000 follies by the admonition, "Do not play with fire," so we may be warned against the evils of sloth and stirred up to a consistent diligence by the extreme pictures presented in the book of Proverbs. The sluggard roasteth not that which he took in hunting. It grieves him even to bring his hand to his mouth. He turns on his bed as a door turns on its hinges. His garden is overgrown with weeds and the wall broken down. We can hardly suppose that any hungry man would think it too much trouble to roast the meat taken in a strenuous chase. We cannot suppose that any hungry man in sound health was ever too lazy to bring his hand to his mouth, nor have we ever encountered one who is attached to his bed quite as securely as a door is attached to its hinges. All these sayings are lively caricatures of human weaknesses. There are men who would regard themselves as models of diligence and yet who are apt to tire of their labours just when the most energy is needed. They are like the man who will not trouble to roast that which he took in hunting. Sometimes they seem full of energy, and when a good work is nearly completed, lose interest in it, and after a period of inactivity, go in chase of something else. They are good hunters, but poor cooks. Can we see any trace of this weakness in ourselves? The door turning on its hinges may serve a useful purpose, allowing entrance to a room while keeping out the wind, but the sluggard turning on his bed performs no service of any kind. This seems like a caricature of a man who cannot make up his mind. Is indecision really one of the effects of sloth? We can imagine that men who experience difficulty in making decisions would answer this question with an emphatic no. They spend much mental energy in their careful weighing of arguments, and so they multiply the tasks which a sluggard would scheme to avoid. They would attribute their difficulties to an excess of caution, never sloth. Well, let us take first a simpler and more obvious meaning of the proverb. Many people find that bed pulls in the morning and the labours of the day seem unattractive. It needs an effort to spring up and face the cold water, but once taken the plunge, no one wants to return to bed. If we're determined not to be sluggards, we rise at the proper time and overcome our sleepy indolence. In the same way, with almost every task or duty, unless we are very much interested in the work, there's a natural reluctance to take the plunge. The first step is the hardest in nearly everything. Even in such a simple matter as the writing of an article, this rule applies. We may feel sure that there are possibilities in a certain subject or idea, and someday we'll write it. Once started, the work may be easy, but before we begin, thought is necessary and we're reluctant to make this mental plunge. This is one form of indolence. It's like that of the sluggard on his bed. On the other hand, there are some people who in this matter of writing would get a start very quickly when the idea first occurred to them, but they soon get tired and often fail to complete the work. They're like the sluggard who fails to roast that which he took in hunting. Returning to the matter of delayed decisions, we must at least admit the possibility of the trouble being due to a form of slothfulness, even if the effect is to cause more work than was necessary. The most important decisions of life are usually the easiest because they have to do with the clear issues of right or wrong. The difficult decisions for Christians, at least, are those in which no clear principle of right is involved. They're relatively unimportant for the same reason that they're difficult. Why then spend much time over them? There may be many pros and cons which have to be considered in the effort to make a wise choice, but it's not possible for human beings to be sure of taking the best course however carefully they weigh the evidence or however long they delay the decision. In such matters, all that is necessary is a little hard thinking and then a decision on the basis of the judgment formed. Those who hesitate and delay in the majority of instances are merely putting off that day of hard thinking. They're not really weighing the evidence with the diligence they would like to display, they're merely deferring the mental work. There's a danger that the hard thinking will never be done, and that after all the delay, there'll be at the last a hurried and bad decision forced by circumstance and pressure of time. There is no doubt considerable mental strain in putting off a decision. The problems calling for settlement hang round the mind and worry it even if the real thinking is persistently delayed or crowded out altogether. It's quite possible that a certain type of slothfulness is the real cause of this indecision, even though the mind is thereby subjected to a far greater strain than would be involved in a diligent attack and a direct settlement. Few things are more wearing to the mentality than the dangling ends of problems needing a decision. It's far better to clear them away promptly, yet they must be properly dealt with and with due exercise of thought. It's possible in this matter for slothfulness to cause quite opposite effects. Some men make hasty decisions while others are too slow. In each extreme there may be the same underlying cause, The decision may be hastily made or persistently delayed merely to avoid the labour of thinking for which it calls. The hasty man has the better part, for he troubles no more until perchance he encounters the evil consequences of a bad decision. The hesitating man torments himself all the time with good intentions and wears himself out with protracted half-thoughts, yet his final decision may be just as bad as the other. If a man can detect any stray trace of his slothfulness in himself, he may perhaps overcome it. If hard thinking is needed, let him promptly get down to hard thought, form a judgment and make a decision on the basis of facts known, and then there's no need to suffer from either the tangling worries of work deferred or vain regrets for decisions made. The matter was well considered without undue hurry, without delay. The decision at the time seemed wise, and as no one else knows what would have happened had some other course been taken, we cannot be sure that we have acted unwisely, even if the results are disappointing. There's no place for vain regrets, which are only weakening in their effect. The wise man went by the vineyard of the sluggard and found it overgrown with weeds and the wall broken down. Then he considered the matter and received instruction even from this negative example. He gives us a beautifully poetical summary of his conclusion. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travelleth, and thy want as an armed man. Here the literal meaning is obvious enough, and there's no difficulty in applying the description just as it stands. The main danger of wrong application would be from those who have had little experience of gardens. They might judge a man as slothful when he'd only been away for a short holiday or a few days of illness. The garden, however, is only an illustration, and where there are lessons in this rapid growth of weeds. Wherever the surface of the soil presents itself, seeds will fall and weeds will grow. Wherever there is unoccupied surface of mind, impressions will be made and thoughts will develop. Wrong thoughts seem as hardy as weeds, while right thoughts are like rare and tender plants. Just as weeds, unless they're eradicated in the early stages, will quickly run to seed and increase the evil, so it is with wrong thoughts in the mind. Here we will mention one point of correspondence between garden and mind, which so far as we're aware has not been developed before. Just as dirt has been defined as a matter in the wrong place, so a weed is a plant in the wrong place. Some may think that the most troublesome of weeds would not be desirable anywhere, but this may be due to our lack of acquaintance with their properties. It's an undeniable fact, however, that a plant, which may be in certain circumstances a valuable growth for mankind, will be a weed if it gets into the wrong place, hindering the development of other plants and doing no good itself. In the same way, thoughts, which are quite good in their appropriate place, may be as weeds when they're allowed to obtrude at the wrong time. There is much work for the diligent in so developing the mind that thoughts can be kept in order.